So we're reading from Jivadharma chapter 7. And, you know, what happened was, is in my iPad, half the chapter was missing. And then I realized it really didn't make sense, so I've done a little bit. So that part we're probably going to go over again, but I don't think it's just good to refresh whatever I've done. So we're in chapter 7. So, Om Gyanatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Saksurum Mutam Yena Tasmai Si Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Dati Svapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Vipashindu Bhayevicha Vatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So let's follow this wonderful story in Jivadharma of people coming to Krishna consciousness the generation after Lord Chaitanya. So the setting is West Bengal in Navadvip, the place of Sri Chaitanya on the island of Gojrum, in a beautiful kind of forest bower ashram. Even when I go to Mayapur every year, I do visit Gojrum Dweep. It's quite beautiful. And so as you remember, and some, I'll just say a little bit, sometimes people are new, the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness. And the book is so brilliantly constructed, or the history or whatever it is so brilliantly constructed that according to the person who comes, a different subject in Krishna consciousness is required to clear his doubts and move him forward on the path of bhakti. And therefore, besides the storyline, the philosophical thread is that all the subjects, the tattvas of Krishna consciousness, are systematically described. So, this is the story of a materialistic family coming to Krishna consciousness who were very miserly, and thus their children became miserly, and their children conspired to take their wealth, sent them on pilgrimage, and absconded with all their wealth, and was so materialistic that the parents, Damayanti, the mother, and Chandi Das, the father, afraid to come back, and they basically had to take a very simple and renounced life. But in that life, they got the help and the association of Vaishnavas, which actually changed their heart. They specifically were taking shelter of one Vaishnava named Yadav Das, who was a very pure soul. And he used to give Harikatha. He's a Brahmin teacher type, simple. And Chandidas became really inquisitive, and he really wanted to know you know, what is really this material world, this material existence? Because he was so immersed in it, he really had no other vision, how to understand things. So he really wanted to know what is this material existence, so that he can actually deal with the incredible reversal in fortune and suffering he had undergone. You can imagine being miserly and then having your own children cheat you. And so they decide, the Shyamalan said, well, you know, really, if you really want this question, I will take you to Paramahamsa Babaji. And then when he got there, somehow or other, Paramahamsa Babaji deferred to one of his disciples, Anantadas Babaji, began to answer his question, and he explained that there's really two states of the jiva. And they can be Buddha or Mukta. They can be bound or they can be liberated. And so anyway, Pyanata Das began to inquire more. And, you know, what is this Buddha Jiva? What is one who's actually Nitya Buddha, eternally conditioned? It's just, what it means is we can't trace it in time. And he said that the basis is their identity, their egoism. And this is really the core of material consciousness, is your conception of yourself and your conception of the things around you. That's actually determines whether you're material or spiritual. So this I identifying with not the soul, but the body and the mind, you have so many false designations. I am this, I am that, I am that. And then, and from that comes mine, a sense of possessiveness. So the spiritual life or material life, the difference is how you view yourself and how you view things in relationship to yourself. When you view yourself as I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, which is what your bodily designation informs you of, speaks to you of. Of course, we have to work through these designations. Even though the designations are connected to the false ego, still we have to work through them, but still we identify them. Then he asked him, well, do they exist in the liberated state? And he said, yes, but they're related to the soul. So he says, well, then okay, there's a real identity, it's related to the soul, related to actually, there's a true identity of I. Not a false identity of I, but actually a true identity, not a misconception of I, but a true conception of I. And the true conception of I is that I am the servant of Krishna. And these are the things in relationship to me that I use for that service of Krishna. So then, Yadav asks, well, what's the defect in material existence? He says, the identity is not in relationship to the jiva. It's not, your identity is not connected with your true self. And thus, it's not real and it's impermanent. Because, you know, it's not something that's standing, when something is real, it exists eternally, because that's what it is eternally. And things that are not real, they're the things that are temporary. They have no permanent existence. They're permanent. The thought of their permanent existence is the mental conception you put on them. It's not that my body is not real. It's just not a body. It's just not a self. It's various types of material elements. So what's real is eternal. And that's God and God's energy. And other things. The reality is the eternal elements that compose them, but not the construct we impose upon it. Sunyata Vidas is this deceptive material existence false. They say, no. What's false is the conceptions that the jiva has. Not that the jiva doesn't exist, not that things don't exist, but your conception of them. So he says, well, why are we fallen? Then he explains, because jiva is tattastha shakti. Tata means the shoreline. It's not the ocean, it's not the sand. Sometimes it's the ocean, sometimes it's the sand. Sometimes it's a dry land, sometimes it's the wetland. It's tata, tatastha, tatastha. So the jiva is tatastha. It's marginal, and therefore it has a choice. So why has it fallen? Because it chooses to be. It chooses to be. When you, it really, illusion is caused by desire that exceeds reality or exceeds constitution. A desire that exceeds what can be fulfilled actually can be only fulfilled in dream. So he says, why doesn't this true identity of the jiva manifest despite significant endeavors? So then he explains there are appropriate endeavors. There's an inappropriate. So what are inappropriate? Karma, jnana, yoga are inappropriate. And why? Yes, because they create obstacles. To what? To the real awakening of the self. Even though they're directed to purify one, it can create obstacles. Karma, you can become material attached. And jnana, you can become detached from your true identity. And both are false conceptions of the self. Either that I am the controller and the enjoyer, or that I am everything. And there's really not such a opportunity, Anantadas, for success in these endeavors. Because even for karma, there's so many mantras and different rules. People can't follow it. And again, the renunciation is too heavy for practically any person. It's only supposed to be the sannyasis, and even they can't be that renounced. So he says, and why is it appropriate? He said, because the real cause of material existence, and this is such an important point, the real cause of material existence is our attitude. Unless you change the attitude, you can't get out of material existence, because your attitude is the cause. And what's the attitude? It's aversion to God. It's an offense. We've turned away from that which we are part of, which maintains and loves us. So unless you get turned towards God and seek the mercy of God and therefore clear the offense of rebelling from God, you can't achieve perfection by karma again, because they don't deal with your attitude. In fact, they can increase that attitude if you're not careful. Karma can make you more the enjoyer and controller. Jnana can make you more averse to God. So he explains this. He said, then what are the appropriate endeavors? And he says, sadhu sangha, association of devotees, and prapatti, surrender. This is the endeavor. You have to change the consciousness. You have to be inspired to change your consciousness, and you'll only become inspired to change your consciousness by one who has changed their consciousness and can speak with conviction about that. And that's called the sadhu. Unless you're associating with people who have changed their consciousness, then you can't help yourself. And then he quoted verses about this from the Bhagavatam. O sinless one, we are inquiring from you about the supreme benefit. This material world, even a half moment's association with a Shuddha Bhakta is the greatest wealth for the human beings. So how can you attain that supreme benefit? Yantadas says, it's by sadhu sangha. Real sadhu sangha can change your consciousness. So then Chandidas says, now I understood. And he went, what? We're pure entities and we forget Krishna. We've fallen into Maya. We're bound by the world. And if we attain Krishna's mercy, we can be delivered, because otherwise we remain in the same condition. And then Anantadas said, okay, that's a preliminary understanding. It's great you understand these, and gradually you come to understand these things. Chandidas from Yadava, who brought you here. And in relationship to this, he says, Sri Jagadananda has written this book on the condition of the jiva that describes, he wrote a beautiful description of the variegated conditions of the jiva in his book called Premadhi's Art. And then the last time we read all those verses, which just explain how the living entity forgets his own identity and wanders and has so many different upadis or designations and so many different material places. And he's wandering through this material until by the association of the bhaktas, he understands what? He understands his identity. And then his life becomes meaningful, because his identity is actually what he is. It's not something that has to artificially be maintained and projected and defended. It's something that's so natural. It's what you are. It's just like a lie is hard to maintain. So false identity is hard to maintain, because it has to be maintained by your effort. Who you are doesn't have to be maintained by your effort. In fact, your lack of effort just to be will reveal who you are. So, and then by the association of devotees, your true identity, and then you become detached, and then you lament, and then you pray and you cry to Krishna. And then you ask for deliverance. And Krishna's a mercy. He delivers you. And then by his mercy, Krishna will empower you with the chit-shakti. So we have the chit-shakti, the spiritual potency. The loving potency touches your heart, and Maya loses its power to attract you. And you get that param drishtva, that beautiful taste. And therefore he concludes, Sadhu Sange Krishnanam E Matratai Samsara Chitete Arkona Vashtunai. Therefore, the only infallible method to cross the insurmountable existence is to chant Krishna Nam, the association of devotees. Yadavadas, Babaji, the sadhus of whom you're a speaker are also present in the world. And they're also oppressed by the miseries of existence. So how can they deliver other living entities? So Natadas explains, yes, it's a fact that we live in the world. But there's a difference between the life in this world of the sadhus and that of the jivas who have been bewildered by Maya. I mean, they may appear the same, their earthly lives, but internally there's such a difference. And also the sadhus, the real sadhus are very rare. And you may not always recognize them. So Ananda now is going to explain a little bit of this Vaishnav Tattva. He says there are two categories of jiva who have fallen into the clutches of Maya. Some are absorbed in the insignificant pleasures of the world and really have their faith in controlling the world as their enjoyment. While others are dissatisfied with the pleasures of Maya, and they have finer discrimination, and they hope to attain a superior quality of happiness. They realize that conforming the world to our desires is superficial, it's temporary, it's not satisfying. Ultimately sad because it's temporary, that we really, what's required, so there's types of jivas that understand their faith is no longer in, I always give this statement, I forgot where it's quoted from, but pleasure is the happiness of the madman and happiness is the pleasure of the sage. Happiness means consciousness. So he's explaining it's consciousness. And therefore, Ananda explains that there's people who are two groups. Those who lack the power to discriminate between consciousness and matter, and therefore seek their happiness in matter, and those who have the, possess that insight. And then that some people, they refer to people who had no insight as material sense enjoyers, and those who have insight are mumukshas. Mumuksha, like mukti, are those who seek liberation. He explains, when I use the word mumuksha here, and I'm not referring to brahmagyan, those who seek nivrishesh brahmas, monistic knowledge, undifferentiated oneness. I'm not speaking about that when I say mumuksha. This is an antidas. But rather, those who are exasperated with the miseries of material existence and seek their true spiritual identity, they are mumukshas. Muksha literally means the desire for liberation. Now, this is all an antidas. He's explaining. When an amoksha gives up his desire for liberation and engages in worshiping Bhagavan, his bhajan is known as Shuddha Bhakti. The shastras do not order us to give up mukti. Rather, when a person who desires liberation gains knowledge of the truth of Krishna and Jivas, he's liberated once. So we don't give up mukti, we just actually understand what mukti is. Muktir idva yata rupam surupena. I quote this verse. What is mukti? It's giving up the false conception, but adopting the real conception, our sloop, our own identity. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Rajubi Shamar Shankyata Pativaya Jantava Esham Ye Kechene Hante Sheovai Manujadaya. The jivas of this world are innumerable as particles of dust. Among all those living entities, very few attain higher life forms, such as those of the human beings, devas or gandharvas, and very few of those adopt higher religious principles. O best of the Brahmins, among those who adopt higher religious principles, very few strive for liberation. And out of many thousands who strive for liberation, one may actually attain the perfected or liberated state. O great sage, among millions of such liberated and perfected souls, a devotee who is fully peaceful and exclusively devoted to Sri Narayan is extremely rare. Bhaktis of Krishna are even more rare than those of Narayan, for they have surpassed the desire for liberation and are already situated in the liberated state. They remain in this world as long as the body endures, but their earthly existence is categorically different from those of the materialists. The bhaktas of Krishna live in this world in two conditions: as householders and renunciates. Jyanavadas. The Bhagavatam shlokas, which you just quoted, refer to four categories of people who possess spiritual insight. Of which of these four, which type is considered Sadhu Sangha? So he went through, and he's going to be listed here, that there are four types of people who have this spiritual insight. So which are the best to take advantage of in Sadhu Sangha? Anantadas, there are four categories of people who possess spiritual insight. So he's going to explain. Viveki, those who are conscientious. Mukshu, those who desire liberation, those greater and greater awakening. Mukta, those who are liberated, and the Bhakta. So the Vivek means a person who has some kind of discrimination. Mukshu means it's come to the point of really having a strong desire to become liberated from this world. And then there are people who are actually liberated, and then there's the Bhakta. So who is the best Sangha? He's made these four people. Among these, the association of the Vivekis and Mamukshus is beneficial for Vishayi, gross materialists. So the Viveki understands I'm not the body. He's conscientious. He follows some principles. The Mamuksha actually becomes desired for liberation. So those two are very good association of the Vishayi, gross materialists. And the Muktas are either liberated individuals with an insatiable thirst for transcendental rasa, or impersonalists who pride themselves on being liberated. Only association with the first type of mukta is beneficial. So those who are liberated, the ones who have an insatiable thirst, the Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato Bhakti, for Krishna consciousness, for developing a relationship with God. Only association with the first types of muktis is beneficial, because the Mayavadis, are offenders, and association with them is forbidden at all. Such has been condemned. So here, he wants to know, because the most appropriate endeavor that yields fruit to actually develop liberation and spiritual consciousness. Let me go on. So he condemns those. This is a very famous verse. Oh, so he wants to know how to get out of material existence. Well, it's the Sadhu Sangha. So who's the best Sadhu Sangha? One who's liberated. And it's an insatiable thirst for love. So what about those who are impersonalists? Quotes from the Bhagavatam. Yinye rivindakshiva muktamanayas prayastabhavara vishuddha gudaya aruya katrena param padam tata patantyadunhajita yusva. O lotus-eyed Lord, those who do not take shelter of your lotus feet vainly consider themselves to be liberated. Their intelligence is impure because they are devoid of affection and devotion to you. In reality, they are but ajivas. Even though such people attain the platform of liberation by undergoing severe austerities and practices, they fall from the position due to neglecting your lotus feet. The fourth category of discriminating souls, the bhaktas, are attracted either to Bhagavan's opulence, a majestic feature, Aishwarya, or his sweet and intimate feature, Madhurya. The association of the Bhagavan bhaktas is beneficial in all respects, particularly if one takes shelter of those bhaktas who are immersed in his sweetness. The Shuddha Bhakti Ras, the transcendental mellows of bhakti, will be manifest. So who's the best sangha? It's the bhaktas. Those who are attracted to God. And of those, one who is attracted to his sweetness, which means his love, not just his power, those are the best. And now we're getting to the point where we actually had begun when I was using my iPod. We can go over it. Bhaktas are either grihastha bhaktas, householders, or chagi bhaktas. Oh, Yadavadas, you've explained that bhaktas live in two conditions. Kindly explain this clearly so that people like myself who have limited intelligence might understand clearly. And Ananta says they can either be grihasthas or renunciates. He says, please to describe the nature of the grihastha bhaktas in this world. Anyway, I'm going to stop for today now, unless anybody have any questions. Would anybody say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hare Krishna
Maharaj,
this is
Bhagavad. This is who? Bhagavad Gita. Okay. I may end a little early today unless there's any questions. Any questions or anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I'll give you a little break early today. I've just got fatigued and my mind's not working. Okay, thank you all for coming. Hare Krishna.